You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
For real.
And me, Brian. So let's begin this week's episode with Dragon Ball Super, episode 81. Bergamo the Crusher versus Son Goku. Which one wields the limitless power?
It's Goku, right?
Yeah, it's Goku.
Yeah.
Just checking.
So you get this fight between Bergamo the Crusher and Son Goku.
And he has the same power as, what was that guy's name in X Factor? Was it Strong Guy?
Strong. I was thinking more Sebastian Shaw.
Me from... too, yeah.
Oh, no, Strong Guy physically got more muscly the more
Did
you punched
him. I
can
remember, yeah.
Okay.
I think but, Shaw yeah, that's does his power. As well, but not as big as this guy gets.
No, this guy just grows gigantic. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought as well, Goku just throw him, because if I recall, that doesn't count. So just like flip him a bunch of times and just knock him out. He won't
shoot
get any
a
bigger.
Fucking energy ball at him. Stop punching him.
But no, I like the way he dealt with it, though.
A different strategy, and also it did work. And as I mentioned before, Goku is used to fighting 50-foot-tall like monster guys anyway, so he's probably
walking
apart.
I think he says that's like a really old trick, man. Yeah. You know, I've seen this shit before.
So yeah, basically makes him grow really big, and then so he's got loads of blind spots. Then he beats him up easily, and then he's like, well, that was fun, but I really wanted to see you use your own power rather than my power against me.
That was such like a cheap shot and everything. And then he goes Super Saiyan Blue, and then he does, oh, fuck it, I'll do like the...
Kaioken attack as well.
Kaioken attack, but I'm just going to go overkill because like Zen... Like initially Bergamo says... He begs Zeno to go like, okay, would you please like cancel the rules if I can beat this guy?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because they'd reveal the rules of we're totally going to destroy the universes and shit.
Yeah. Also as well, his main thing was, hey, this guy Goku is responsible for all this thing, that dumb rule. Don't you all guys hate him now? Everyone said, yeah, you're right, we do hate Goku. Boo! And Champa's going, boo, everybody hate him, right?
Yeah, see, the thing was, and we kind of cuts back to Beerus and lads, is like, oh, they're really sneaky, playing, making Goku out to be the villain. I'm like, he's fucking right.
Right, though.
It's all his fault.
And it's like, you know, the tournament will go ahead, but like we'll take out the Destroy Universes rule, and we take it, okay, Goku, just throw the fight, but then like the... Whis's dad says, Goku, don't throw the fight because we'll know about it. And yeah, Goku's like, I wasn't going to anyway. I'm Goku. Is that what I do? Da-da-da-da.
Yeah. They couldn't fake it like the last tournament as to who won. dear.
And is it before or after? Is it after where we get... it's after we get the rules, isn't
it? It's after.
It?
Yeah. So now it's been over with.
Yeah.
Then Osama from the future has been totally impressed with what he's seen, wants to see more, and now here are the rules for the actual real deal tournament.
Yes. Again, did not expect these rules.
No. Like I say, 48-minute fight, and Whis is like, well, that'll take a very long time. And I liked how the fact is like the length of two episodes. And so it's to kind of make you think, oh, blimey, how long is this going to go on for?
Yeah.
But remember, the journey from Beerus' palace to Earth is precisely the length of one anime episode.
Yeah. But I did like that because it was like people thinking that they're at least going to do one fight per two episodes. That's going to take so long. It's like, no.
Royal Rumble.
You're all fighting all at once and you're not allowed to fly and you're not allowed to kill anyone.
Was it you're not allowed to fly or is if you hit the outside of the ring, you automatically fall? Like, so you can't like be thrown out of the ring and then fly back in.
You can't fly in the void.
But you can fly in the ring.
I assume so, because they do seem to be flying in the opening credits.
That's what I was thinking as well. Okay, I was just confirming that was the case.
Yeah. Well, it's like when they did the Universe 7 versus 6 tournament, you know, where they could fly, but they were stuck inside that box for Vegeta's round. So.
Yeah, there's like a barrier, I assume, this time around.
Yeah.
As opposed to an actual force field like there was in that episode.
So there are bounds to it now, but just if you go outside those bounds, you're just going to fall like a rock.
But yeah, it's going to be nuts. 80 people fighting at once, and most of
it's
them
great.
Going for
I figured it would be like, you know, maybe like one stage of them would be like this, but they thought, no, we're just going to put everybody in there.
I thought they were going to mix it up with lots of different kinds. Like, this one will be like a tag match. This one will be a thing. It's like, no. Everyone fight at once.
Yeah.
So I think the best case scenario is for all the universes to dogpile on Goku and just get rid of this fucker.
Well, inadvertently, that may happen now because of what happened earlier on.
But it's okay. They've got Gohan, as Goku says.
Well, yeah, Beerus is lamenting because like that requires teamwork. And he's like, oh, shit, we got Goku. Oh, no, he can't work in a team. And he's like, yeah, I can work with my son. It's grand.
It's okay. I got my son. He's a nerd. He's going to die. Teamwork or something like
he's
that.
He's smart. Fine.
He wears glasses.
Dear. Mm. Yeah.
It'll be like a big melee thing, but it's going to like probably hop around within an episode to different like areas of the fight to kind of pair off or kind of group off in little kind of smaller fights in amongst a massive brawls going on in it. So,
because if you put like 45 minute length in three episodes, you wouldn't be able to fit all that fighting in. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It'd be like, I say they probably took a lot of lessons from what One Piece did in Dressrosa with their tournament thing.
Yeah.
Okay, here's four massive fights, and winners of those go into a fatal four-way at the end.
The rules with this one is like, if you have like one guy standing at the end of it, your universe doesn't get destroyed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Like at least one of your guys.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So there's possibility for a double count out at the end. Who went over? Whose foot touched the floor first?
Didn't Zeno say something like that he definitely wanted to erase some of the universe, like clean house a little bit? So if you're the last man standing, he might say, it's like, okay, I'm going to extend the time, like, you know, that kind of thing.
Possibly.
And then the last guy standing is in for a bit of trouble.
I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think whoever wins will win, and then it'll be then Goku will say, "I wish for everybody's universes not to be destroyed." Thanks.
I don't know if he's even capable of that right now.
But I do like the fact that the Dog Man asked nicely,
yeah,
and the opportunity was given. And when Goku wanted to ask nicely, he was told not to by Beerus.
Hmm.
And Goku is the most loved by Zeno.
Yeah. And this random dog that specifically wants to beat the crap out of his friend Goku asked nicely, and it was like, yeah, okay. He's a reasonable child god thing.
Well, I've seen some good fights so far, so I'm in a better mood. But he's always in a good mood, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's just Beerus, you know, he's afraid of the boss. He's afraid of asking him to the boss. Even though, you know, he's not scary. He's a regular guy like you or me. He's just, you know, the overlord of all creation. If everything that was is, never will be. But besides that, he's a pretty okay guy.
Oh, and this episode we also get the reveal of who was in that dark hood.
Before
thing.
They go, Toppo wants to challenge Goku to a fight because Goku is evil and he is...
Space cop.
He's from, what do they call themselves? The...
Oh, jeez, I forgot.
Pride Troopers.
Yeah, that's
right. Universe 11. Guardians of Peace.
And he's a little different than I think we expected him to look.
He looks like Colonel K from Danger Mouse.
Yeah, with the big hands and everything.
And he also has those, like, Starfleet uniform as well. So
yeah.
What's his face from the intro is probably from the same troop.
Yeah.
Mm.
And a bunch of other guys as well seem to be in the opening credits.
It was also interesting that the gods seem really surprised by the level of Goku's power. They're like, wait a minute. This is godlike power. Oh, fuck.
Is that allowed?
What have you been doing, Beerus?
Yeah, I think they must have done the power levelings like they might have counted it a while back.
Possibly.
Because I was also thinking, like, Champa's universes must be rated above Beerus's, and yet it's like, did he just find scrubs for his last tournament?
Yeah, he's got to find five more.
Well, I don't know. It's, I wouldn't say they're really power level or doesn't make him wait for that much anymore, because you can have just really odd things. Like, he has this whole thing where I'm not, like, you know, I don't have godlike power, but I can just, like, jump through time and punch you in the past or in the future, like that. So just a little thing like that, or don't necessarily need to be on the level of, say, Goku or whatever like that. I can just be like a weird fox man, spit poison in your face, and wait it out until you die.
Oh, you weren't allowed to use weapons either. That was another rule.
That was, yeah. I was wondering where they're going to go with that, which would change it from the last tournament. But yes.
So that's why they're not throwing in power pills or sensory beans.
Yes. So Frost will be annoyed, because no doubt they'll have to, he'll have to make the numbers up, even how he behaved last time.
Sorry, Frost, you got to chop your arm off.
Yeah, I think he's still in the closing credits, isn't he?
Yes, I think he is.
He is, yeah.
I think we get new closing credits next time, though.
Oh, okay.
I think they said there's a new song debuting. And, of course, next week there is no episode.
Oh.
Actually, I never really mentioned how much I actually enjoyed that ending credits bit with the comic page.
Oh, it's great, yeah. It's really good.
I feel like it's a lot... It's not that it's better animated or whatever, but it's kind of like an improvement on the last one, which was like the... you remember the spine on the old Dragon Ball volumes of all the characters? It had the kind of feel of that in the prior credits.
Yeah, but this one's like that as well. But this one has got... there's fun stuff to watch as you watch it. As to see how people respond to other characters behaving in other panels.
Hmm.
But yeah, and so this guy's called Toppo, and obviously in 2 weeks we'll have Goku versus Toppo. Maybe he'll convince Toppo that he's not evil.
He's having trouble convincing me, so...
It's not evil, it's just stupid. Which is no excuse, really, but, yeah.
Hmm.
Right, onto something which wasn't on next week, to something which wasn't on this week. There was no Shonen Ashibe Go-Go Gama-chan this week.
Aw.
So, after making do with Bono Bono, episode 34, I Can't Catch Fish... In which Bono can't catch fish, so his dad and then Fishing Cat try and help him out.
Mm. His dad tries to teach by example, and he really he can't figure out. It's like, okay, I'm going to go catch a fish. You ready? All right, you watching? He's like, yeah, I'm watching. Okay, goes grab a fish. Okay, did you see that? Did you see how I did it? He's like, no, not really. Okay, I'll try it again. Second hand, full of fish. And then it's like, I don't really get it. And he's like, I can't really do anything. I got a handful of fish.
You went underwater, Dad. I can't see what you're doing. I have to follow you down there, because I can also swim and dive and stuff. So I don't know why I don't just follow you down and see what you do down there. But
A fishing cat takes a more abstract approach, I suppose, is the best way to say it.
Which involves throwing rocks at Bono's head a lot.
Well, he's supposed to catch them.
Yes.
Like, either dodge it or catch it. It's like, it hits him in the head with a rock. It's like, you couldn't decide which one to do, could you? It's like, no.
So he casts a magic spell to absorb all the anxiety from Bono Bono.
Yeah, and I think the spell was, like, bullshit so he could
convince him. Oh, of course it was.
It was initially, like, to show him, it's like, see, you picked up that rock all by yourself. And Bono's like, what do you mean? He's like, okay, there is magic then, fine.
He tells him to throw the, because basically he says, I've got to pull your anxiety into something you don't like, and he finds a sharp stone with 4 points on it, which the cartoon illustrates by putting arrows to each point.
Well, it's like, I don't like it because it's sharp, and I don't like it because it's sharp in 4 places.
Yeah. I liked how oddly specific that was. So he absorbs all the anxieties into this thing and then tells him to throw it away, and he throws it off screen, and then it bounces back into him in the head, and then you pull out and there's a tree right next to them.
No, I really don't like this stone.
Throw it that way.
Maybe his whole deal was, no, you want to just push all your troubles into the stone, man, just throw it away. Just get it out of here. Get it out of your mind.
That's now. Pick up this stone from, because he's trying to get him to take a stone from his hand, and he was getting anxious when he could, after they gave up trying to catch it, and he's still getting anxious, and so he was like, let him go through this, and he says, then pick up this stone from my hand. And he took it. He said, there you go. It's because you're more of a picking up kind of guy than a taking kind of guy. And then he tries to prove it by saying, okay, take this stone from my hand, and then Bono Bono just takes it.
Well, let's not sweat the details.
And then the episode ends.
Yep. Pretty good. Bunch of good gags.
It was a nice good gag. Nothing freaking me out.
No existential terror.
No.
washing over you.
And apparently next week, Raccoon wants to see a landslide.
Sounds good.
Which apparently involves him and Bono Bono trying to make a landslide happen.
He's not going to wait around for one.
No, of course he's not. Next on the slate, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 22, The Straight Man Appears, in which the straight man appears with a present for Nobunaga.
Yeah.
He's not what he was hoping for, though.
He was hoping it was sweet, wasn't
he? He was, yes. He was hoping it was sweets, but instead it was the brother of the shogun.
Which is still pretty good. Both the brother of the shogun.
If it's into his aims, but it's not the immediate gratification that some sweets would be.
Yes.
Like, oh, this is a work thing. Okay, well, it's still good, but oh well.
And the shogun's brother is pretty happy with it as well, because he's like, oh, brilliant, I can use Nobunaga to do what I want to do.
Yes. To Nobunaga is like, I can use him to further my own ends.
Yeah, they both have exactly the same thought. Yeah, and yeah. Also, it's called The Straight Man Appears because Akechi Mitsuhide is the straight man to this show, who's been lacking a straight man all the way up to this point. But now Nobunaga is really pleased that there's a man here who will react to all the idiots around him.
Well, generally it was like someone would act stupid and then someone else would react to it, depending on the situation. But I'm guessing his job is just to be reacting then.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think I'm hoping the idea is that this is what drives him to murder Nobunaga, is the people that Nobunaga hangs around with.
Just the workspace. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Wouldn't he take it out on Dindy Idiots rather than Nobunaga?
Well, he hired them all. They all work for Nobunaga. He's
but he didn't have to come up for Nobunaga. He came to him out of choice. So really, he's got no one to blame but himself then.
I know, I'm sure there's no problem at the moment. I'm just saying, over time, I'm hoping this will just wear away at his psyche. And it's like,
he will just like project the blame.
Yeah,
onto
justifiable homicide at the end.
He does seem pretty... But taken aback by, what do you're ninjas? Eh? Oh yeah, just my ninjas. They're a bit weird. Don't mind them though. Said, how are you? I'm Chittery. And what do you do? Oh, I'm a ninja. I love being energetic and super happy. And that's pretty odd quality for a ninja. I don't know.
And then Hideyoshi turns up covered in dogs.
Currently being mauled by dogs. Yeah. And he's like, hey, how's it going? I'm Hideyoshi. And he's like, how are you doing a cool dude pose? Yeah, freaking out at these weirdos.
And then they explain where they're going to march, and then Nobunaga makes an excuse to go and visit his sister. And then his brother-in-law hears about this, and his advisor goes, Nobunaga's up to no good, we should do something about it when he comes. Dun-dun-dun.
Well, he assumes, because he just yes. doesn't like that Nobunaga at all.
Yeah, so I think they announced the title for the next season, which kind of indicates it's going at least up to 1570.
Which is there a new subtitle? Or
yeah, I can't remember what it is, but it's the particular military thing it refers to is in 1570.
Right, okay.
And it's around the time at which Nobunaga turns on his brother-in-law and the shogun's brother. So I assume that's where they'll go to.
And see the hilarious reason that happens.
You never know in this show, there may not be a hilarious reason. It would just be very bloody for an episode.
Yeah. Actually, I think I've got to mention there regarding the things being announced for these short things is that Bottom is getting like its own little short thing airing at a planetarium in Japan.
A planetarium?
Yeah. Huh.
That's an odd one.
I'm not sure what it was about, but like I can imagine them, this Bono and company, up the stairs. It's like, what are you stairs about, man? Like, what do they do?
Yeah.
Well, they write this, Bono.
Maybe you have to go. Maybe you have to climb into a little stone cave in order to watch these things. So I had seen they did make a cardboard put away man and his cave. Where you could go and have a photo taken.
Of him putting you away.
Of him putting you away, yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, on to my brief Haybot recap for this week. Episode 23, They're After the Screw Soul, in which Haybot dies twice.
But rose again on the third day.
Yes. So... There's some very strange things happen at the start of the episode which don't entirely make sense. There's like electricity shooting between Haybot's belly button and Nature's belly button, which causes a portal to open in the sky, and out of the portal comes the villain from the very first episode. The guy who's got the cybernetic eye. And he's there to take Haybot's screws. And he refers to it like being at the first level or the first layer. And basically it's intimated throughout the episode, that, as was intimated in the last week's episode, that this villain is the future Najaru. And the thing which turns him into this is him coming from the future to take Haybot's screws from him.
Okay.
Okay. What? So he's a bad guy, but he became the bad guy because he came back to the future as the bad guy to take the team and become the bad guy.
Yes.
That's very... Well, I figured it out, I suppose, but it still doesn't make a lot of sense.
Except that does not happen because as he's about to do this, someone throws two screws at him. And in case you weren't aware that they were the same character, when they both see these two new screws, they both act exactly the same. They both get these two really like hollow eyes appear in their foot heads, and they're like, "Oh, new screws! What are these new screws? We've got to have them! Got to have them!"
Yeah.
And these two screws turn out to belong to his Najaru's hitherto unforeseen brother and Haybot's little brother. So it's Najaru's big brother and Haybot's little brother show up, and then they fight the future Najaru and beat him, and they get the screws back. And everything's fine. And this guy he's about to kill Najaru at one point, and then the Screw King, or rather the guy who lives inside the Screw King, comes and has a word with him. It's a very strange show, and this kind of didn't really explain anything, but kind of gave you a bigger sense of what the main story is.
Okay.
So there's something involving time and realities, which they're giving you little clues to so far, but this was like the first big thing.
Yeah,
and well, everyone, the side characters are all going, well, this is a much more serious episode than it normally is.
Yeah. I guess that the nature of how the evil Najaru guy comes back was, I guess, and his the manner in which he becomes a villain, I would say, would, I guess, tie into how you're describing how you were saying that a time is like a helix kind of thing, so it'll be kind of. These two parallel things swirling around each other.
Yes. And the other thing which I hadn't noticed, but I saw a Japanese guy point out on Twitter, is that the cybernetic guy's symbol, the symbol in his cybernetic eye, is the same symbol which is on the back of the Haybot toy's body.
The toy, not the actual character.
Well, probably more the toy than the actual character, because they probably don't draw it every time on the character.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, so, that'd be a pretty obvious thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But it's quite a complicated symbol, but it's the sort of thing you're not going to have to draw a distance. But sometimes, of course, in the cartoon, the character is also the toy. The character is sometimes just a photo of the toy. Anyway, that's Haybot for you. It's hotting up, but it looks like it's going back to being really stupid again next week. Then, I take it nobody else watched Kyuu Ranger.
I again did not have time. Oh, I apologize.
Give up trying to convince you to do it. They're finally on Earth, they're in episode 4. And handily, on Earth, there's more of these villains than any other planet, so I suspect that's an excuse for them to stay on Earth for the foreseeable future.
So they don't have to build sets the whole time?
Yeah, that's a bingo. Or find bits of Japan they can pretend is an alien planet.
Sure.
Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, episode 8. New dragon, Elma. She's finally appearing, huh?
Yes.
She sure is.
Yep. And, yeah, so this introduces the new dragon, Elma, who's from the Law and Order division of the dragons.
Yeah, isn't that like a D&D thing with the different gods
it
that
is,
they worship?
Yes. So basically there's law dragons, chaos dragons, and neutral dragons, who apparently are described as just sitting on the sidelines watching.
Yeah, it looks like a pretty dopey dragon, the way they draw that one.
So Kenna, probably.
Obviously our dragon is chaos. I think that goes without saying.
And I like the way they introduce her, because it starts off, the episode starts off seemingly about something else, about this competition between Toru and Kobayashi to make Kana's packed lunch for a school trip.
A school trip bento, that was it, yeah.
And so they have like an Iron Chef type competition. But in doing that, Toru opens a portal to the other world, and following her back comes this lawful dragon, Elmer. He's like, I'm here to take you back, you evil, chaotic dragon, you.
Yeah, you can't be interfering with the world.
Yes.
That's causing more chaos in a different world that I technically don't have jurisdiction over, but, you know.
And then Toru was like, okay, let's fight. And so I'll go to other dimension here. There's other factions who won't destroy the apartment or anything that's going by. Okay, let's go. And then, okay, after you. Well, thank you very much. Then close the portal. And then Elmer's going like, wait a minute. The government had.
Yeah, and she was all willing to do it because she wrecked Kobayashi's apartment by entering from orbit, I suppose. Hmm. Whatever that was, yeah.
Yeah, even though he can just magic up everything back to normal again.
In seconds.
But, you know, still make a feel bad about it.
And then that episode turns, that part of the story turns where she's working with Kobayashi and she's getting, our maid dragon is getting super jealous over it.
Yes, because Elmer can't go back because she isn't powerful enough to open portals herself.
She's good at fighting, but not at opening portals, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and yeah, as you say, Toru basically just gets jealous. And starts behaving how she was in episode one.
Hmm. Which is more wacky than usual, I suppose.
And it ends with her trying to feed Kobayashi her tail again.
Trying to cleverly disguise it in sandwiches.
Yes.
Hmm.
I think that was it. There were some interstitial gags which weren't very funny.
Which were mentioned.
Yeah, those weren't good. Like, the rest of the episode I pretty much enjoyed, but those bits were like, yep, let's get past this.
Yeah, it's okay. it was fine, but I think it still has been better than this before.
Mm, that's fair.
So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm this far in, I'll probably just stick with it. This has been better than it's been going for a little while now, but I suppose the voice has been taken off one aspect of it and then put it back on this instead.
I wonder were they leaving the other dragon for so long, because it's like we need something to keep the interest. And a new character, obviously, will change the dynamic a bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably all the characters, unless they do something with the rest of that kid's family being wizards as well.
Hmm. It's still the suggestion. The fact that your man now has a dragon working for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Maybe he's already figured that out.
I mean, like, why else would you hire a woman who knows nothing about computers?
That is true. Hey, she learns fast, though.
She does. She's now learned the Roman alphabet of typing.
Yes.
And that's about as far as she's gotten on her first day.
I was curious how she got the job.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking as well.
Right, okay. On to Time Bokan 24, episode 22. America's moon landing was staged.
No blank. This is God's truth.
Well, to be fair, it was their fault.
I did like the way that the amount of screwing they've been doing with time has basically... they were going to land on the moon, but then everyone was scared of space bugs. We have photographs of them.
Yes, the Russians.
And they're like, oh, shit.
Good intel about what's going on up there.
So this is them going back to 1969 to find out the truth about the moon landing.
Which is kind of like was the plan B, or was potentially the plan B at the time anyway. So this is what would have happened if they screwed with time as much as they did. Except for Nixon just being insane.
Well.
He wasn't 30 pandas insane.
No, Nixon in China is later than 69, isn't it? Yeah.
Hmm.
So, but that's where they're getting a lot of his behavior in this.
Hmm.
But it's pretty good, yes. So basically, they've hired the famous sci-fi movie director, Dubrick, who's definitely not Stanley Kubrick. No, sirree.
What? No, it's a different guy.
To fake the moon landing. because the astronauts all ran away from NASA because they were scared of bugs.
What was your man's name who hired Kubrick? Because he was...
That was Donald Rumsfeld.
Yes, they actually used his name, but for some reason they felt like they get in trouble with it at Kubrick. Yeah.
That could be any Rumsfeld.
Yes.
Any member of his family. Yeah, sure.
But Donald Rumsfeld was working for Nixon at the time.
Hmm.
Yeah, so in order to make the history as it is in the books true, Bimaggio and the guys take the actor playing Neil Armstrong into space.
No, sorry. Neil Armstrong is the actor.
True, yes.
Apparently. Mm.
And it would all go well if Richard Nixon hadn't gone insane and kept on saying they were going to do more and more things. So basically you've got Kubrick going out of his mind on Earth. And then imagine
because they got 2 weeks to shoot, and we gotta do all this shit within this time.
Out of a mind in space. So, what are they? They'll believe it or not, Americans will be taking pandas to the moon.
Yes, pandas on the moon.
They're not gonna put the flag down. They're gonna build the Statue of Liberty on the moon. They're gonna catch a bunch of these giant space bugs that you might not have heard about.
The astronaut's gonna climb into a cannon and fire himself
to see how far you go on the moon because it's got lower gravity. Yeah. And so they have to keep changing their fake and real moon landings to account for all this stuff.
Because they get a load of dogs and paint them to look like pandas. On Earth.
It'll look fine on film.
Meanwhile, Bimaggio and they go and steal a load of pandas from China.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, pandas look like pandas in film. You got to use dogs. Or use something that looks like a dog. I don't know.
Tape a bunch of cats together.
Tape a bunch of cats together.
Oh, dear.
Some good little bits as well because we're uncovering government conspiracy, so we get a few X-Files homages in there.
We get a lot of X-Files homages.
There's a lot of Men in Black.
They're really worried about they're constantly worried that the Americans are just going to murder them.
Yeah.
Which I think is the implication of what the Secret Service are going to do.
You've been found out, and then they're reaching into the pocket of the jacket one saying, now do you know what you know? There's only one thing to do with you. It's like, oh my God. You gotta work in the film right now because, you know, just.
The pay's bad, the hours are bad, but.
But, you know, you're already in, so you gotta, like, take him into the fold right now.
It's kind of nice seeing them with their Mulder and Scully faces as well.
Yeah, that was. Pretty good likeness, I think. But as things go, Bimaggio was like, what the hell are we even doing this? As soon as we go down to this shit breaking stuff, like we always do, until we get to the end.
it's a Statue of Liberty robot they make this time?
Yeah, they copy the facsimile of the Statue of Liberty they'd made to fake the moon landing.
Not the real one they stole and put on the moon.
No. That one's on the moon now.
And she's really good at fighting because she's freer. She's freer than anybody else.
Yeah, you don't have to work the controls because she represents freedom.
Yeah,
so those are the two English words of the day: liberty and real, which is Kubrick's catchphrase. Yes.
And Nixon ends all his sentences in Zom.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's his affectation.
Yeah.
Also, he's super Japanese. Did you know that?
I thought he was super Chinese.
Oh, he just kept pulling out the fan. And,
yeah,
I thought
he was supposed to be like referencing Nixon in China.
Okay. I thought he was trying to represent like some sort of Japanese politician type
I don't know. Maybe. I assumed with the panda thing that it was...
yeah, that's definitely that.
Yeah. This was Nabashin storyboards again. So.
Who knew? Yeah, I looked at the character first and thought, this has got to be him, and it was, because I think he's just a man for the job with this show, because this is one of my favorite ones, again, in the series so far.
Yeah,
this was good, and it brings into question the veracity of all the other things, whether these were caused by previous missions, this
organization had gone on. Yeah, basically, time long enough that it's having a ripple effect.
And yeah, they eventually convince the world that America was attacked by a robot Statue of Liberty and they were protected by heroic bugs.
We were attacked by Liberty aliens and then these robot bugs showed up to actually save us. That's why we couldn't go to the moon.
That's the truth. Governance doesn't want you to know.
I can see why they cover that up in the history books, because that's super dumb. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a highlight this week. Right, on to Classicaloid episode 21, Breakthrough, the Schubert episode.
Which are generally the better ones, and I think that's the case here.
Yes, it was pretty good. They basically annoy him to the point of suicide.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's so under, like, I love the opening scene where they all was like, well, good night, Schubert. Good night, guys. And he washes up the dishes and cleans up the place. And then they all lie in their beds. And then he's lying on the couch and like, wait a minute. Why am I on the fucking couch? Why don't I have a room in this house?
In the mansion. There's got to be a room in here somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. But they treat him like such shit that he actually tries to go for the, not the bad guys, but what's considered the bad guys. He decides to work for them. They're talking openly about their plans as if he's not even there, and then they completely forget to mention him.
I feel like we're getting somebody.
Who is it?
Probably not.
So he tries to kill himself and is whisked away by a kite as
as is often the case.
Yep.
Yeah, because they tried to have a competition using music. Everyone was using their music at once, but he couldn't.
Oh, to clean up the one room that was just full of crap.
Yes, but he
and it's clear that it's illusions because when they finish their music, like the room hasn't changed at all.
But he couldn't use his music on demand like the rest of them could.
His is like emotionally charged or something. He was saying.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, he arrives in New York, which is full of Cockneys, and also his creator.
Yeah. Has this his favorite noodles or not noodle stand?
Odin stand.
Yes.
Only Odin stand in New York City.
Yeah. What was the? Was it just someone had learned the Cockney English? They'd done a pretty good job of that. They were like, "That'll do for like New York accent." Or what? Were they making a joke of it?
I don't know.
Because it was a pretty good Cockney accent. All things considered,
there was just someone available who could speak English and they just happened to have a Cockney accent.
Yeah, okay.
They watched a lot of Mary Poppins. And Dyke.
Oh, dear.
Or Jason Statham.
Mm.
True, yeah.
I quite like the speech, the conversation he has with Kanai's dad.
Well, it just makes out Kanai's dad to be... It explains where he's coming from, but still... paints him as a jerk, essentially.
Well, yeah, because he's kind of like, well, why did you take me with you? It's like, why were we created in the first place? He's, well, I just got carried away.
I just fucking was doing shit and happened.
Yeah.
As life, yo, you got to indulge yourself.
That's what he's kind of saying. It's like, yo, Schubert, you got so caught up with what people I think about you and what you're supposed to be, that you're not just letting yourself just be, man. You just do something for yourself. Don't care what they think about you. Think about yourself for once in a while.
And stiffs him with the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both get drunk and he wakes up and he's alone with a note saying, please take care of the bill. And everyone's about to beat him up when a kite comes along and saves him.
Is it the same kite? That's what I'm thinking. Like, is it some sort of kite that he has? Is that part of his music? I don't know.
I don't know, yeah.
It's like flying around the world, circumnavigating it, and every once in a while, just catch him on one
of his loops. And dropping him somewhere else.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in Japan, there's a typhoon going on. They're having to fix the roof. And the kite deposits Schubert. And they're like, what are you doing, you lazy buff? Why have you been helping us fix the roof?
And he's really distraught that they haven't noticed that he's been missing for 2 weeks.
And then he unleashes his music on them.
And that, like, that's the point where I think the episode really hit it for me, because that was fucking amazing. And also historically accurate, really.
Yes. Because they explain the piece he uses was involved setting music to poetry. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is rap. That's what rap literally is.
They just start from playing dozens with them.
Yes.
Yeah. Turning them into graffiti by dissing them really hard.
Yes. And a rare bit of breaking the fourth wall as well with List saying you can't show that much cleavage on this channel.
Even does one over on Beethoven.
Yeah, I love the way it like does the pause in the song at that point, because it's like, oh shit, he's going to go at his senpai. And then they all turn into Parappa the Rapper characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Delivering a better Parappa the Rapper anime than the Parappa the... Well, I'd say just the Parappa anime, because they removed the rapping.
Yeah. Friggin' amazing sequence.
And then he's still behaving like that after the music's ended.
Yeah, and they're starting to not only notice him, but kind of respect him. It's like, well, dude, don't go at him. He'll diss you real hard. He'll give you such a burn.
That's a mad flow.
But eventually he's thrown out on the street.
Yeah, yeah. They put up with it so far.
Yes.
Well, like, it kind of is like, oh, well, no. If you're interested in the room's very free. It's like, ah, that's all right, doll. I'm just going to lay down here in the couch. Just do my thing. It's my, never know mine. It's like, okay, well, fuck off then. If you don't want the room, then get the fuck out of here.
That also explains in a prior episode why he was the tough guy, the school tough thing.
Oh yeah, yes.
It was always inside him.
Love episode, yeah.
It retroactively kind of points that out.
Yeah, this was a good episode.
Yep.
A lot of fun. I saw a screenshot of the Parappa thing and I was like, oh, looking forward to watching this.
I didn't see anything of that and I was just like blown away. I was like, this is amazing.
I'd already watched Time Bogan at that point. I was like, oh, blimey, this is going to be a good Saturday.
What weekends are made of.
That and watching Rude Dog.
Oh, yes.
Very 90s, actually, yeah.
Okay, penultimate anime of the night, Tiger Mask Double, episode 21, Reunion, in which a lot of little bits of plot kind of advance themselves.
Yeah, mostly about advancing the plot. And again, like, the way they're kind of presenting Tiger the Dark, he's a more likable character than Tiger Mask at the moment.
That's kind of his thing, though, is like, yeah, it's great and all, but you're not winning the crowd. So you got, it's not enough to win. You got to try and, get the crowd on your side as well. And to be saying, nah, man, fuck that. I got one thing I do, and it's about winning. I don't care what the crowd thinks of me. But in the episode, he kind of has, I guess, some kind of a personality about his character. So,
yeah.
Be able to, people can kind of latch onto him then in that regard. But also the third is getting back into the ring.
Yeah, because Kevin and Tiger the Dark go to MSG, and then they're told, "Oh, you're going back to Japan." But
to do the Japan takeover thing, yeah.
Miss X is like, "Oh, we need a bit more star power than just the two rookies." And then so the third is like, "Oh, I'm going to go as well."
We also get to see him wrestle that giant guy from the...
Bigfoot,
yeah.
Yes. And he looks like some sort of mutant tiger man. The third.
Yeah, I mean, the original Tiger the Great had an all-over bodysuit as well, so...
Yeah. I meant to kind of go back and check, but, like, did you have, like, an old kind of, like, a... like have one piece kind of bodysuit in, but there are no, like, the hands are exposed and the bare. Was that right?
I can't remember.
That sounds about right, but I can't remember now, yeah.
Yeah, kind of, I've seen other kind of wrestling costumes where you've seen the guys in the spandex and the leggings and stuff like that now, but then his was a little kind of weirder. It kind of reminded me of anything more of the Yuri and I skating costumes than a wrestling outfit.
Okay.
Yeah, and Haruna has a meeting with Miss X, and Haruna's like, "Oh, you want some more of Spring Tiger, do you?"
No, I want Tiger Mask. I want him in the ring. I want him now.
She gets really upset when she refers to her as ex-woman, and is like, "Don't fucking call me that."
No, I do enjoy Haruna now being cocky and sort of feeling like she's got some sort of power over Miss X.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're like, well, yeah, we can't disagree with you because it's in the small print of the contract, but we would like some more money.
Miss X is just like, fine, you're bringing in the money, you're bringing in the punters. How bad? So she's really surprised. It's like, that was surprisingly easy. Because earlier on, she's just working the books and she's always like, hey, we made a profit.
Yes.
Like, pleasantly surprised.
Naoto is still love-lorn about the fact that his would-be Paramore Ruriko is has more money than he has.
Well, he was. I think it's, yeah, that sounds like he's being really, like, that's not very, it's the 21st century. Your girlfriend can make more money than you. But I think he's really upset that he bragged about making so much money.
Yeah, that's what he's worried about. He's,
yeah, yeah.
He thought
yeah.
he was showing off. And he was like, oh, that's not going to impress her.
And he doesn't get good advice from Haruna, but he does from his trainer.
Yes.
Who gives him wrestling-based advice, obviously.
Yeah, and Tiger the Dark gets a injury, and he refuses to let...
Ruriko.
That's her name, yes. Mm. Treat him at first, but then eventually convinced to patch himself up.
Yeah, it's just like a bruise underneath his eye or whatever. But
yes. And we see that, he has to take his mask off to be treated.
So, it's you, the pudding man.
Yes.
I mean, she doesn't know anything else. Sorry, Tiger the Dark.
Yes.
Yeah, but she says she won't reveal it to anyone because, you know, that's part of her contract, I imagine.
Yep. And so then there's this Mexican wrestler who's been...
He was one of the guys poached from the smaller outfits in Mexico, yes. as is related yeah. by the
Mammy.
Yeah. yeah.
And so the climax of the episode is him, his Tiger Mask, having a go at this other wrestler, saying, how could you let yourself be bought out by GWM? And then Tiger the Dark shows up, and they're getting a bit of a fist fight in the corridor.
Yep, which is just good for promotion.
Yes.
They have photos.
Get it on camera.
Yep.
But again, like, now we'll say, like, Tiger the Dark, his thing is that he is Tiger Mask's, like, heated rival. So that's his thing. We're going to play up to that.
Yes.
And also they have different opinions. Like, yeah, so Tiger's all about honor and sticking with your guys and stuff. And he's all about the strongest wins, and it's all about money, etc.
Yeah, and just imagine how upset Naoto's going to be when he learns that Takuma is Tiger the Dark.
Yeah. That's going to add an extra layer.
How could you sell out to the company who the man who injured your father worked for?
Mm. Well, he's just out for vengeance.
I'm going to assume at some point they'll become a tag team.
You think?
I think they'll eventually be on the same page, and they both have.
Oh,
to.
No, they're probably going to have to kill off Kevin to do that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Kevin is not long for this world, I don't think.
No, not Kevin.
They mightn't kill him, they'll just cripple him.
I mean the wrestling equivalent of killing him off.
Yes, because they've been very ambiguous about where the people die. But I suspect we won't see any of those people who got their heads rammed into the ground tearing hell in the hole again.
Yeah, your man got messed up by Yellow Devil by him cutting up his chest and keep stomping on his chest, and yet he's in a wheelchair? It's like, what's wrong with his legs?
Well, he could have stomped him so hard he, like, you know,
hurt his back.
You know, but could have shattered his pelvis.
But from his front?
Yeah, well, it could just be his neck. Say one of the New Japan wrestlers is currently in hospital with a neck injury, and he could... I think he's just getting feelings back to his extremities.
I thought it was just going to be like a non-specific wrestling injury. But yeah, I get you.
They did have, I think, well, they definitely had the voice actress of Haruna, and I think Tiger Mask's voice actor doing commentary today.
Oh, yeah?
On the anniversary show, because they had Tiger Mask double versus Okada.
Which also happened this episode in a tag match format, yes. though.
Yeah. Oh, actually, were those guys supposed to be... what were those guys called? The Natural Disasters or something? I have the wrong name. Legion of Doom, was it?
Yes, the tag team.
Oh, yeah.
The MSG, yes. Yeah,
they were like Metal 1 and Metal 2.
Yeah, they're kind of like Road Warriors types, but
Road Warriors,
masks
it.
Instead of face paint.
Yeah. I was thinking they were going with that kind of thing.
Yeah. Anyway, it's the... Onsen episode next week.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Oh, it's, what was it? Laura Mask's Ambition or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is good. I want to see, again, more of that guy, what his deal is like. What's up with the fucking massive scars that is your body, man? What happened to you?
He turned to a life of comedy.
Yes, it looks like him and Candy Pear in next week's episode.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this a lot. I liked the conflict in the corridor. I thought that was the highlight.
Yeah.
Particularly as they kind of used the same punch animation for each character.
And they both I mean, they're wearing different things, but yeah, basically.
But also, as they were going for the punch, it kind of their faces looked more like a real tiger's than they normally do.
Yeah, it was the best cut of the whole episode of it by the end there.
yeah. Even though it was kind of like setting up plot heavy episode, it was pretty good.
It was constantly moving forward, no, just like inch by inch, but it was still moving forward, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, on to Akka, the 13 Territory Inspection Department, episode 8: The Princess Who Spread Her Wings and the Friend Who Had a Duty. So, we get a flashback to 33 years ago, and let's do the maths here, the 18 years after that.
Yes.
Yeah. This was a really good episode from a really good TV show, and it went in a slightly different direction than I was expecting it to.
Yeah. Like, I was expecting it just to go with the princess's past and that kind of thing, but actually it focuses a lot on Nina.
Yes, I like the fact it's kind of, it tells you the story from the distance that Nino and his dad observed the story.
And it makes a lot of, like, it makes it sound reasonable that Nino has been spying on Iran his entire life. Like, it's like, how could you get someone to spy at someone for their entire life? It's like, yeah, this is explains reasonably how that could happen. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and you also, like, well, at least I was like, okay, who's that kid? Because it can't be Nino, because Nino is supposed to be the same age as Gene.
Exactly.
You get 21 Jump Street homage.
That's true. Yes. Well, so you got to go back to high school. I'm 25.
That's where his glasses. No one will know.
Everyone think you're a fucking nerd. Great.
Chet cool dude. Recent transfer student.
Dear.
Yeah. Well, like I figured, like, obviously the princess must have ran off with like her closest aide, you know.
That seemed to be the suggestion.
Secret romance, but actually, no. He was that's all he was. Wasn't royally. He was still very like devoted to them, but not in that way. He just wanted to be watching over her.
He also appears to be Graciela.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I was thinking like that make Graciela is like fun 60 years old. He doesn't look it.
That's true, but we've established that people from Rock all look alike or very similar.
Yeah,
they all have the white hair.
They all look quite old as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, but they carefully hide his eyes through the entire episode to make you think that it's probably Graciela. But the story makes sense that it has to be Graciela. There's nobody else it could be for it to make sense.
Yeah, and like you know, and it's established now that this guy, you know, he's the guy who built the apartment block
He built the apartment block in the stead of the king.
That's
the thing actually, that the entire elopement and stuff, or her leaving the royal family, was part of the fucking king's plan. Like,
yeah,
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, so basically she wants to go and live with the common people.
And they're really worried because like she's been reading all about this democracy and bullshit. So they're like, we can't be having that.
No way.
And so Qualm is like, well, there may be a way we can do this.
I mean, it's not, what we're doing isn't technically legal, but, you know, we can implement this system where she loses her... She's technically written out of the royal family?
Well, yes, because she's dead.
Yes.
Yeah, but they set up the entire situation in which she dies as well.
Yeah. Yes.
The figure that she gets to live as a common citizen in the rest of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And that will then won't have to worry about if in the event that he succeeded and wanted to dissolve the monarchy or anything like that kind of way.
Well, the other thing is like they have your man keeping tabs on her.
Abend. They basically say her guard, who's the equivalent position as Maggie to Schwan.
Yeah.
Qualm goes to him and says, well, the thing I'd like you to do, but if you do it, you've got to sign this to absolute secrecy. It's for the princess. And he's like, oh yeah, I'm okay, but as long as I can bring my own servant along with me.
And Iran seems against it, but he's like, he's as loyal to me as I am to the king, so it's fine.
He only
has a kid, so it's not a problem.
Yes. And then he deliberately, as it turns out, deliberately makes sure the kid comes along as well.
Yeah.
Just so that there'll be a replacement And also, for obviously, it probably helped his.
Help the servant, you know, make that decision. You know, even though he would have gone along with it, but it made it easier for him to do it. Because he was ready to just ditch the kid and just go and do this thing because he was asked to do it. But
I'll tell you what, I will leave my kid, but can I buy my son an apple tart first? Because you know, I'm not going to see him ever again.
And also, something to remember me by. Yes.
And also, it makes it so that it's Nino suggesting that he comes.
Yeah, he kind of makes it so, he says it so that Nino overhears him.
Yes.
So that Nino will be like, I'll fucking come too. I'll sign the document. I'll also be a spy.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. So it's like it's his own decision.
And then the rest of the episode is basically Nino and his dad observing.
Growing up watching the family.
Yes.
His dad keeps calling her a princess. And Nino's like, we can't really call her a princess anymore.
And a lot of stuff about bread.
Yeah, obviously bread. Come on, sandwiches are great.
Yes, and it's the same loaf that they send to the king is the same one that Maggie brings back for Schwan.
Yeah.
Got to put a lot of butter on it.
Well, are they sending it as opposed to the king or to Avind?
No. I think he's sending it to the king.
I thought it was to the king, like, because he's talking...
He's sending it to Avind, but these are all things to go to the king.
Yeah.
Who all the photos are for.
Mm, so he can... So even though his daughter lives a separate life, we paid for her husband to run this building so that we know she's set up. And also you get to see your grandkids grow up without actually interacting with them. That kind of way. Yeah.
So the guy that Nino has been on the phone to is Avind. So now I'm thinking...
I think it's either Avind or the king. Yeah, it's still not entirely...
I think it's probably Avind because he's the guy closer to it. And he's probably still modern daily reports and monitoring of what's going on with these people, with his family that he cares about.
Yeah, sure.
So now I'm thinking as well, we see Grosseter on the phone to somebody as well. Is he on the phone to Nino then? So if this adds up and Avind and Grosseter are the same person, is he calling Nino asking about those reports and what's going on at that end?
Hmm. That's feasible. Like, I think we figured that is Nino, like, working for at least three people. Because I think he was talking to Grosseter, and then he got interrupted with a phone call, and then he got, like, a phone call off someone else.
It could also be that Grosseter isn't Avind.
Yeah.
We've set that up because of saying that people can look the same from that area. Maybe it is the other guy who he thought was Grosseter.
Just the random on the street. Sure,
the guy
on
the street. It was him,
I think you're probably right that it is Grosseter, but yeah.
Mm. As well as now, their whole thing was, okay, we're going to like remove this person from the line of succession so it won't cause any opposites in the monarchy, but that plan seems to have kind of bitten them in the ass because now like Schwan is just in line for the throne. So this thing we did 3 years ago is going to come and really screw us over now.
Well, that ties into everyone talking about, hey, maybe there's a coup. It's like, this heir to the throne sucks. Let's get this guy in instead.
Yeah.
That could be one of the coups that somebody's fucking planning, you know?
See, now that I'm thinking out, like, here was somebody, you know, who wasn't lying for the throne, wanted to institute, like, great social reform and probably do a lot of good for the country. And now this, you know, and now I'm kind of thinking, maybe the coup would have been a good idea. This wasn't that needed to happen. Wouldn't have needed to be any coup at all. We'd just let things as lay as they were. But people have got to hang on to tradition and things have got to be done the proper royal protocol. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm. See, I was going further. I was thinking, is Gene's entire career in the inspection department deliberately arranged in the same way that his father's job was?
Yeah, I was also thinking that. And the other thing is, if that's been arranged, that could have been arranged by Akka to make him pro-Akka and less pro-royalty. So we put, like, okay, we'll put this guy in as the next line of succession. He'd keep Akka going.
Yeah, I was so much thinking pro-Akka, but for him to be a person who's got a feel for all of the different territories.
Oh, that would actually be a practical... yeah. He knows how they work and what they need.
Because obviously that's what his mother wanted, was to go out in the world and understand the world better.
Understand the different peoples of their dispersed
nation. Yes, and it feels like his career has led him to that point that his mother wanted.
He specifically has to deal with all the different things and understand how they work.
Yes.
That's his job. Yeah. Okay. That does make sense.
And the fact that he never gets transferred out of there.
Even though he doesn't want to do the job. Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense.
I've been kind of looking as well. I could be just like reading much into things that are in the intro. Maybe that's we've gotten more.
I think that's what it's there for. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, you know, at the start, you have like the kind of title card there. And the bird comes in. The bird is the same kind of one that's quite a shape. Like, and it takes like this leaf, which I guess maybe some kind of another emblem of it. And then it goes through the whole thing. And then it gets to the end, and you see Gene lighting the cigarette, and then he's like walking down the street. And then you see his reflection in the puddle, and the leaf lands on top of his head in his reflection in the puddle. As in, that's supposed to be some kind of like crown, shall we say?
Yeah, probably. I imagine that's supposed to be representing it in some way.
Yeah, that's probably just more a clue as to his heritage rather than his eventual.
I think that's going to necessarily happen. Yeah.
But I thought, it was kind of in there. If again, I could be just retroactively just reading into that based on what I know now or what I suspected. But yeah.
No, I think that's appropriate because, like as he's walking away in one of the things in the opening, a pair of glasses drop, and there's an upside down reflection as through a camera lens in a pair of glasses of Nino watching him in the same place. And I was like, well, that's literally fucking referencing the glasses, which was his disguise and the camera thing. It's all fucking there. All the hints are there for you.
The moon landing was faked. Face bugs. World yell along.
Yeah. Cracking show.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
And what's happened? I'm trying to guess what's happening, like, you know, based on the episode title next week. I got a black adder was on the move or something like that. So I'm thinking, who wears a lot of black? Quam does. Is he going to come into the mix with whatever he has planned?
If he's actually planned at all. I thought you were just going to introduce Rowan Atkinson. All
right. We shall find out next week.
Yep.
Okay, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what is coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain. Guys, what's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Okay, well, after some technical difficulties, we should have Rudok and the Dweebs, which is Brian, coming up soon. And then closely following behind that, if we get our ducks in a row, we should have Skeleton Warriors for good pal Jake Burke also. Look forward to those.
Do they have holograms in their chest?
Those are visionaries.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought the toys had holograms for Skeleton Warriors.
Have, if I recall correctly from the show at least, little gems in their chest. And when you break those gems, they turn back into regular human beings. Okay. So I never actually had any of the toys for Skeleton Warriors. So I'm not sure if that was like a USP of them. They had little gems on them. I thought the fact that there was skeletons.
I don't know who I'm thinking of. I'm sure I'm thinking of somebody. There was some sort of monster type thing where, like, the entire head and torso were a hologram.
That does sound vaguely familiar.
Yeah, they'd like have a cowl. They'd like be a cloak and a cowl, and then inside the cloak and the cowl would be the head and the body. Anyway, that's not what's on Dynamite in the Brain this week. On Dynamite in the Brain, we've got episode one proper of the famous anime podcast, where we will be deciding which of the anime based on Shonen Jump properties that were published during the period between the start of Dragon Ball and the start of Slam Dunk deserve to be called famous.
Ooh.
So I think that's 86 to... What is it? No, 84? When did Dragon Ball start? 84, didn't it? The TV
84.
Series was 86.
No,
yeah, 84. Yeah, 84 to 93.
Okay, well, there's some good stuff in there, I think.
Yep, you have to listen to find out which we decide is famous and which we've never heard of. There's one in there which, I forget every time I hear of it. But needless to say, the other guys have not heard of it at all. And also discussing what is a successful Kickstarter, or the Japanese equivalent. We get into that as well. There's one thing I think is famous because it raised its Kickstarter or equivalent things, and then we delve more deeply, and I go, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out. And also come back next week to hear us talk about all these other cartoons. Slightly less, though, because Dragon Ball won't be on. hopefully Shonen Shiba will take his place. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ta.